huddle up.
66 HitchX Vegas Flair. I'm one ready.
It's time to break down the boldest plays.
Let's go, baby! Boom!
Hardest hits. Woo! And the craziest stories from around the NFL.
Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Fire the cannons!
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
A mid to late March edition, a NFL dead period edition of Sunday Huddle on ESPN 106.3. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Colin Russo with you. Joined alongside me is Cade Chumslin behind the glass at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach, because it is Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet. Go download the app today. Go get started, because with the round of 32 up and away, and it's a very chalky time. So if you're somebody who likes to bet the favorites, you're in luck. On Hard Rock Bet, download on the Google Play Store, the Apple App Store. Go to hardrock.bet online to get started today. Hard Rock's awesome because they even had a bit of a lottery system in terms of their own little profit boosts and the things you could get involved in. And it's very fun. So if you're the new type of player who wants to kind of get a feel for what a sportsbook's really like, check out the Discover page. You can see what other parlays are put together, what profit boosts are put together. Hard Rock has a bunch of little different offerings and games in spirit of the NCAA tournament, which has kicked off underway fully through at this point. Hard Rock's the best because you could also get $100 back in bonus bets if your first bet does not hit. That first bet can be a parlay, a prop, the over, whatever you like to bet, any game you choose. Win that first bet, you'll get the same amount you bet back as a bonus bet. Hard Rock Bet, offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus and physically present in Florida. The wager, terms and conditions apply. Considered by gambling, call 1-888-ADMIT-IT. Well, Cade, throughout the first round, it was interesting because it was the first time since 2017 that no 1-4 seed lost. Things have changed through the round of 32. Of course, St. John's being a 2-seed loss yesterday to 10-seeded Arkansas. While 3-seeded Wisconsin lost to 6-seeded BYU. Who saw that coming? I certainly did. But a couple 1-4s have lost in the period since then. But I think this tournament has been categorized by it's been a little chalky. And there hasn't necessarily been a Cinderella, hasn't necessarily been a major massive upset. Plainly put, there hasn't been a lot of drama on the early part. The games were better yesterday, but not a lot of drama throughout the first round, throughout the first 3 days, I'll say, of the NCAA tournament. I think you can't cry for the mountain. You can't scream to the mountains that, you know, the world is ending here, because ultimately, if it's bad in the beginning, it usually means it's going to get really interesting towards the second half of the tournament, but not a lot of drama here in the early part.
No, there really hasn't been that one team that you're kind of backing to make a run.
Even that one game. The one game was the Arkansas-St. John game. That was it.
Yeah, seriously. There's not been this crazy buzzer beater. We had a little bit of stuff last night, Wisconsin-BYU.
Good game.
Really good game. I happened to watch the last like minute and a half of that game, and what a defensive play by BYU at the very end there when Wisconsin only needed 2 points, and they put the ball in their player's best hands. Who was that?
John Tanjay.
He had 37 points on the night, goes down for a drive, and gets absolutely stuffed.
Yeah.
And so great defense play there. But other than that, really no like last second buzzer beater attempts. Everything's kind of been within like 5 to 10 points, just solid victories for all these teams and not a whole lot of upsets. I agree with you.
Yeah. With that Wisconsin game, 91-89 final, 6-seeded BYU playing in Denver. There's something about the Mormons in the mountains, and they're very dangerous and very dangerous team because they scored 91 points and they coasted offensively. But Wisconsin loses as the higher seed in that sense. The end of that game was interesting because the referees, I thought the officiating yesterday throughout the games was entirely too involved. And to talk about what happened with BYU-Wisconsin really quick is BYU had one of their best players, Baker, ejected for trying to split a double team, moving his elbow through. There was about 3 minutes to go. It was 86-76. BYU was up. And trying to split a double team, and his elbow grazed the groin area of a Wisconsin defender. They reviewed it. Flagrant 2. Ejected. A kid who's played well. It was completely inadvertent. It was baffling how a kid got ejected for that. But it was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Dawson Baker, who's having a good game, eject him, completely changes the game. Wisconsin rumbles back. All of a sudden, it's 89-85. Getting close, and then it's 91-89 to finish the game with Wisconsin having a chance to either tie or take the lead. Now, Wisconsin has not gotten to the second round of the or the second weekend of the tournament since 2017, 2018. Not good. Not good. Not good. But the drama to what we were talking about before, not a lot of drama. It has been a year that is characterized by the really good teams are really good. And the mid-major teams haven't really been able to hang around with some of the really good teams. The one seeds are really, really good. Creighton's a good team. Auburn handled them in the second half. Houston got close there at the end with Gonzaga. Gonzaga had a chance there down three to tie at the end of the game. But still, for the majority of the game, Houston was in control. Another one seed. Duke plays Baylor today. I think Duke is going to steamroll Baylor. Florida, who was my champion, is playing my UConn Huskies as well. I think Florida's going to steamroll UConn, unfortunately. But it's a year where the top three, top four seeds on any part of the bracket are a head and shoulders better than a lot of these other teams. Purdue played McNeese State yesterday. McNeese State was a 12 seed who upset Clemson as the five. They played Purdue as the four, and they were never in the game. For 1 minute of the entire game, they were never in it. And Will Wade, before the body was cold, in the locker room, signing a six-year contract with NC State to be their next head coach. Hate how that works. That's another conversation for another day. But, Kate, I wanted to ask you a question because the biggest drama was Arkansas-St. John's. 75-66, a 10-seeded Arkansas who had not had a good year in the SEC with John Calipari in his first season. A lot of talent, just never been able to put it together. Versus St. John's, who has been one of the great stories in college basketball with Patino, St. John's, who hasn't been good, great in forever, as a 31-5 team. Arkansas knocks them off. Calipari and Cal have a bit of, not a rivalry, they're not friends, but they're two all-time great coaches. St. John's could never get the ball going offensively, could never get their offense going all game. RJ Lewis, who was the Big East player of the year, who's the best player on their team, who's probably the NBA player of the bunch, had a terrible game. He was 3 of 17. And you could nitpick how St. John's handled who they went to in the second half and everything like that. But RJ Lewis was 3 of 17 to finish the game. 3 of 17, he had 9 points. 3 of 17. Now, Rick Pitino is getting bashed because of how he handled the end of that game. St. John's was flirting with taking a lead there. It was a bit back and forth. Up until the last 2.5 minutes, I thought St. John's was going to win it. Really. That game was, it was back and forth. It was 61-58. It was 62-60. 64-60. 5 minutes to go. Then eventually, with about four or five minutes to go, RJ Lewis subs out at 64-62. RJ Lewis doesn't see the floor the rest of the game. Now, Rick Pitino is getting bashed for this decision. Their best player, close game. It was a 2-point game when he left. They ended up losing by 9. Didn't have a lot of options offensively. Are you ever in favor of benching your best player? Football, basketball, anything. If he's having a poor performance, late game tight, win or go home, is it always, are you one of those people that thinks you always got to have your guy out there?
It depends on the situation. So what you so I never actually got to watch this game, but what you told me coming into the office today was that he was having a bad attitude on the court. Felt like he was quitting on the team.
He was 3 of 17. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves.
The numbers speak for themselves, but how good of a defender is him? Is he? Because at some point, I would say to my best player, listen, spread the floor and just get your butt on defense and lock down whoever you're guarding, right? Yeah. At some point, that best player is also probably your best athlete, which means you just need to guard who's ever in front of you and be a magnet on offense in order to spread the ball around. But if he also looks like he doesn't want to be playing well, then I got no problem taking off the floor, too. I mean, it goes situation by situation. At some point, you got to just say, go all in on defense. Or if you can tell, I think cancer is the wrong word, but if you can tell he's not giving you the right energy while you're on the floor and the team is going down because he's going down, then you got to take him off the floor and give some new energy to the team.
My personal opinion, and I'm not the one in charge of making this decision whether to put him in, is I thought he was a black hole. He had a couple moments there, layups, defensive rebounding, hustling to a degree, but he was taking a lot of iffy shots. He was 3 of 17. His teammates were desperately trying to pick up his confidence and his energy. And Rick Pitino was asked about it post-game, and he said, listen, he played 30 minutes. I'm not going to give you the soundbite. See, I know you're looking for it. When people ask about R.J. Lewis, why he's not playing. See, I'm not going to give you, you know why he wasn't playing. I think with Pitino, who is an all-time great, who we've seen talk in the locker rooms before, and what he says, he's like, listen, I don't care about the missed shots. I care about everything else. I care about the energy. I care about your effort. I think that was a reflection of it. Now, it was another bad look because St. John's had Kadari Richmond, who's one of their better players too, fouled out. There's a lot of foul trouble. And some of their best go-to players were not in the game. But I think Rick Pitino was trying to prove a point that, like, listen, you could play poorly offensively. You could not hit the ocean from the beach, for all I care. But I think if your energy or your confidence and everything else is wavering and it's rubbing off on the other guys, sit down next to me. So I think that was his takeaway. I personally, in the moment, yeah, St. John's was looking for a piece offensively and they just didn't get it. They didn't hit shots all day. I cannot blame. I'm surprised he's getting so bashed. I've heard like beat writers from other schools and talk about coaching malpractice. This is a disgrace. How can you... He was terrible the entire game. If he's terrible and his attitude stinks, get him out. That's my takeaway. I see both sides. I really do. This is a win or go home. Sometimes, like, that's your guy. He's the biggest player of the year. Got to have it. But if you're a net negative comparatively to a net positive on the court, sit down. That's my takeaway. Maybe I'm not St. John's coach. I don't know enough about R.J. Lewis. I don't know if he said anything or if anything was done, but I cannot bash Rick Pitino for putting him on the bench for the last 5 minutes of the game. I can't.
Very Coach Boone-like and Remember the Titans. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes. It's a principle thing. And I'm not saying he was disrespectful, but if you're not going to give your all or if you're sucking the life out of the team, it's almost a negative to have you on the court comparatively to a positive. Kate Chums and Colin Russo with you on Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet. Kate, a chalky bracket. You for it or against it? Do you see the vision or do you want the Cinderellas?
I want the Cinderellas for a little bit. I wish I had a few moments where we had some Cinderellas go to Sweet 16.
So we've been talking about this. So there's a time and period where the Sweet 16 or the Cinderellas sort of run their course. They get stale. Where is that for you?
That's like the elite. I wish we had one double-digit team in the Elite Eight.
Okay.
And then we have the best of the best in the Final Four, and we get two fantastic games on that final weekend. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I wish we had one of those. Like, we still have a few 12s that are available to us right now.
Right.
Or at least one. We've got New Mexico, who's a 10. We've got Colorado State, who's a 12. So, and we got Arkansas, who's a 10. Like, if Arkansas can beat Texas Tech next weekend, that'd be pretty cool. And to see Rick Calipari take that team as a 10 seed, that, like,
is Arkansas an SEC team as a 10 seed? Is that a Cinderella?
It's not a Cinderella, but it's a double-digit team that you did not expect to be there.
I think New Mexico and Colorado State are our last two chances.
Yep.
Those are our last two chances. But you're in favor of one Cinderella to take us through the Elite Eight, Sweet 16 area, and then it's like a new toy. You had your fun with it. See ya.
Or if there's that one player that everyone's backing. There's that one guy that everyone wants to see go far. Maybe he's a 6 or 7 seed type of guy, but like he's a player. He's a name. Who was the massive kid on NC State last year?
DJ Burns.
Yeah. Like we had a guy to cheer for when that happened, right? So I wish there was someone like, there's not someone specifically.
Yet. Give him the first weekend. Yeah. But you're right. There's a lack of a storyline right now. The storyline lies in the great teams. The storyline lies in the Cooper Flags and Duke of the world, but the problem is Duke is not going to be challenged until the third round.
We just have to wait.
It's almost like you got to wait for them. Florida, we know Florida's great. Florida might kill UConn today. I'm a UConn fan. We play at 12-10. The first two games of the day are at 12-10 and 2:40. There is not a third game until 5:15, and those two games are a 1-9 Duke-Baylor and a 1-8 Florida-UConn. Both those games might be 20-point games. Bad job by the NCAA. That's another problem for another day. But okay, a chalky bracket though. Do you view it like me? Yeah, not a lot of drama in the first round. Hasn't been a ton of drama generally so far this tournament. but I could see that this is going to head somewhere where you're going to get some really enticing, engaging matchups towards the third and fourth round.
Oh, yeah. Even next week, I'm excited for a few big games. Auburn versus Michigan. I have Michigan winning that game. I'm excited for that game. I've got Iowa State and Michigan State next week as well, if Iowa State can beat Ole Miss, which also should be a really good game. So there's going to be some fantastic games next week. You can see BYU-Alabama. You could see Tennessee-Kentucky, potentially. Houston-Purdue should be a good game. Purdue's looked fantastic. I know they haven't had too much competition.
Now, one thing about Auburn and Michigan, you brought that up, is Danny Wolfe, who is Michigan's probably best player, was on Yale as a 13 seed when they beat Auburn last year in the first round as a 13-4 upset, and then Danny Wolfe transferred to Michigan alongside Dusty May. So there's an interesting little storyline there.
Yeah, there's a ton of storylines in that game. So there's a lot of stuff to go around, and I think the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, we should get some elite stuff here pretty soon.
Yeah, I agree with that, because one thing I think people forget about is when there is a Cinderella, it's fun to follow them, and then all of a sudden, if there's multiple Cinderellas, if it's FAU here, San Diego State there, Miami's making a run, then all of a sudden, you're trying to get excited for these games throughout the week, and it's a little harder because these teams are not marketable is not the word I'm looking for, but they're not as great on paper. They're not the one seed. They're not the teams you were talking about all year. So that's why eventually, if and when, you know, Florida and Duke run into each other in the title game, there's a storyline there. There's intrigue. They haven't played very good teams, seeing the best of the best. There's a year in and year out basis of where sometimes a chalky bracket, it just adds to the flame because you got a lot of very good teams and you want to see them play each other. And then sometimes where the tops of the tops are not that great, or there is just one great team, the UConn of last year, the UConn of year before, there's one great team and everybody else is kind of, you know, prepared for the pickings between the Cinderellas. Now, on the flip side of things, we'll take a timeout. I'm curious. If we're trying to it's a small sample size, but if we're trying to diagnose a problem, the lack of Cinderellas, the lack of lower seeds making a run, the lack of drama in the early part, the mid-major comparison to the high major, it's pretty glaring this year. Is that a product of the NIL? Is that a product of the current college landscape where if you're a good player in the mid-major, good player in the low major, instead of sticking around 2-3 years, seeing if you could put something together with this team, you're going to get plucked before you could blink and go to the high majors? Does that separate the high majors, low majors? Is the NIL and the current landscape of college basketball, is what we're seeing this weekend, the lack of drama, the chalky bracket, is it a product of that landscape? We'll answer that question. On the flip side of things, it's Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet over on ESPN 106.3. Kate Chums and Colin Russo with you. Taking a timeout. Back into this.
Let's go scatter to west, right, tight. F left. 372 Y-stick Z-spot.
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Listen, if you've been in a car accident, truck accident, suffered a slip and fall, had an accident of any kind, my friends Mark Anajar and Glenn Levine of Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys are the type to fight for you. They don't charge you unless you win. They work tirelessly to get you the maximum compensation that you deserve. They're the best in the business for a reason. Let's call it like we see it. Don't settle for just any attorney. Demand Anajar and Levine today, because that's the Anajar and Levine difference. All it takes is one phone call to take back control of your life. Don't wait. Call for that free consultation today. That's 1-800-747-FREE. 1-800-747-3733. Don't wait. Take back control now with Anajar and Levine. Colin Russo, Cade Chumson with you live from the City Play Studios in downtown West Palm Beach on a beautiful Sunday edition of Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet. March the 23rd, 2025. You got a full slate of round of 32 NCAA tournament action. You got UConn, Florida, Baylor, Duke in the early part of games, and some intriguing ones later on as you got Richard Pitino against Tom Izzo in the Michigan State, New Mexico. You got an Oregon, Arizona, Pac-12 after dark field to that one. Illinois, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Iowa State. Some intriguing games to follow throughout the day. Now, so far this tournament, I think it has been, the conclusion has been, it has been a bit chalky. There hasn't been enough mid-major, low-major excitement, madness, if you will, unpredictability, surprises. There hasn't been. Now, I'm curious, Cade, because if you're trying to diagnose a small sample size, why is this? Why aren't any, the low major teams, the mid-major teams, not even competing in half the games? They're in it, they're not in it. Hasn't been that much drama in terms of back and forth. Is it because, in some sense, small sample size, that the NIL college basketball landscape lends itself to aiding the ones and the two seeds of the world comparatively to the mid-major champions that are trying to make a run? Because if you're good in a mid-major, even for a year, you don't even have to be the best player in your the best team in your conference to be even moderately successful. All of a sudden, you're going to get calls from the Tennessees, from the Alabamas of the world, because Rick Pitino said it earlier in the year. He goes, I'm not going after high school players anymore. I'm going after college players. I'm going after transfers. Those guys are more adequate, more capable of replacing my production comparatively to an 18-year-old. That's the bottom line. That's sort of where college basketball recruiting is heading. Does that hurt the mid-major team in your head? And therefore, does that hurt the tournament outright because a lot of these mid-majors, they're the prey to the predators of the top seeds?
I think we're forgetting that literally 2 years ago, the highest seed we had in a Final Four was a 4 seed. 4 seed, 5 seed, 5 seed. And then the last one, I believe, was an 8 seed or 9 seed.
It was
with
an 8, 9, 4, and a 5. UConn was a 4. Miami was a 5. Florida Atlantic was a
8.
8 or a 9, one of the two. And San Diego State was a 5, excuse five. Me. Yeah. Yes.
So that was just 2 years ago. So, and that was a whole bunch of not necessarily mid-major teams. FAU and San Diego State were right up there.
Yeah.
But
non-power fours.
But that was just 2 years ago. So we are, I think, taking this a little bit as an exaggerate of, hey, we just happen to have some really, really dominant teams this year. And this is something that's just been happening throughout history as well, where it ebbs and flows between the madness of March and the elite doing their best. In 2008, for the first time ever, and since the only time ever, we had all 4 1-seeds make the Final Four. 2 years later, or 3 years later, in 2011, we had the highest total number of seeds make the Final Four with a 3-seeded UConn, a 3-seeded Kentucky, a 4-seeded UConn, a 8-seeded Butler, and an 11-seeded VCU, which was a first four team. That was 3 years after all 4 1-seeds made the Final Four. So I'm not going to say, oh, the NIL has ruined the tournament just because we happen to have a year where all of the best are doing really well in their respective roles.
Now, the NIL is new. Last couple of years. Do you think that it aids the high major team comparatively to the low major team more?
Yes. But again, there is opportunity for those mid-majors to have the opportunity for a lot of really good untouched talent.
You got to be a little savvier.
So Will Wade, who I know you have thoughts about for
the McNeese State head coach, former McNeese State head coach. They lost 12 hours ago, but now he's the current NC State head coach.
It was a very interesting interview he had on Sportsmanlike with Evan Cohen, Chris Canty, and Michelle Smallman, which you can listen to from 6 to 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 106.3. He did an interview with them like 6 hours before he took that NC State job. So it was a very interesting, awkward interview. But he said something that really resonated with me on how mid-majors can work with the best of the best. They are basically not the minor league system, but they feed the mid-major teams through the transfer portal. Come to us, make a run, make a name for yourself, and then we can help you push into a larger team. You look at FAU from a few years ago. Almost all of those the starting five from that team are now with
high major teams
that are in the tournament right now.
Alongside the coach. Yeah.
The coach, Vlad Golden, is also with Michigan. Elijah Martin is making a name for himself with Florida right now. Yep. John L. Davis is also with Michigan right now, too. Those are all guys who made names for themselves with a mid-major team at FAU and then went into the transfer portal, got into big major markets, and are now making their names even more for themselves at the highest stages and could make some great tournament runs. I think that could still be the role of those type of teams. Be the farm system into the major D1 programs, and therefore, teams can get together some of the best future talent, a lot of good young stars, and make some runs in the future.
So you're more on the sense of you'd rather them be a little bit more of a minor league team, and that we're going to get you best prepared to take steps forward with other teams.
I think that's a good selling point for those teams. Hey, listen, because think about, I'm trying to think of a good example from around here. Let's take a good high school player in the name of Javian Jones, who right now is playing for the Kings Academy Lions, played football and basketball, made our top 63 list last night at our top 63 basketball event, also made our top 63 football. He is not getting the looks right now from major D1 programs that he was hoping for. But let's just say he takes a smaller offer and then absolutely balls out. That's an easy way to transfer portal, easy way for him to start getting to those bigger markets that he was hoping for out of high school. It might just, your high school period might just need to take a few more years at the lower collegiate level, because all it takes, Colin, is one remarkable season to make a name for yourself.
Now, it's funny you say that, because yesterday at our Top 63 event, I spoke with Coach Jeff Price of Grandview Prep Girls Basketball.
State championship team.
State championship team. Jeff Price had a 30-year career coaching collegiately, Georgia Southern, was the head coach at Lynn University right down there in Boca, which is a D2 school, high-end D2 school, good basketball. I asked him that specific question. Does the current landscape lend itself to the high majors versus low majors, and what's your perspective on it? He said exactly that. He goes, the mid-major, D2, NAIA, those types of schools, their selling point has to be, we are going to propel you, we will move you ourselves after a year. You are rentals. We are there to prop you up, get you found. It is harder than ever for high school players to get found. He went on to say about how over at Lynn, he's got two guys on UC San Diego who just played against Michigan as a 12-5 game in the first round. He said it's tricky, it's hard, but similar to how a lot of high major coaches didn't want to adjust to the NIL, it's sink or swim. Jay Wright, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, those guys have the money to just retire, and just they've had the careers where they could just kind of walk away from the game because they just don't want to deal with it. The D2 coach, the NAIA coach, the low D1 coach can't necessarily do that. They got to keep coaching. So you got to kind of move with the times in terms of, all right, well, this is the landscape. This is how I'm going to adjust to it. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I guess, is a whole nother question. But it's harder, therefore. So you're talking about, hey, we'll get you here. We're going to propel you to the next level. That's the goal. That's the goal of what that school is trying to do. We will get players here by telling them, hey, if you play well here, we will get you to a better school. Do you think that doesn't lend itself to the team being any good? That lends itself to the player being very good. There's a little bit of a individualist aspect to that, because all of a sudden it's me throughout high school trying to get found. And it's me throughout your first few years of college trying to get found. And then you get to a team that's very good that you're going to be a piece on, and all of a sudden it's we, college sports.
I think that needs to be good coaching then.
Yeah.
At that point, the coach
needs understand
to,
my point though, right?
It's
minor league-esque.
I hear you. The mindset of these players now is looking past their current team, which could hurt the current team that they're actually on. It's almost like an all-star effect where all-star teams don't necessarily play together. Shout out Coach Herb Brooks from Miracle.
Mm.
But the coach needs to be the one to understand that is how he's selling these players. And then when it's actually time to have his five guys step onto the court, hey guys, we need to start playing as a team. You do have to strike lightning in a bottle a little bit to get all five of your good guys to play well together. But,
and you got
to
do it quickly.
Yes, absolutely. But I've seen it in the past, and I'm not going to not believe that it can happen in the future as well with some of these teams. I'm not going to say that all of these mid-major teams, we're not going to have three 13-seed teams win next year or something like that. But I'm not going to say that madness can't keep happening in this tournament.
I agree. I'm not ready to say that. It's too small of a sample size. I think this, to your point, I'm just trying to exercise the argument. The grand scheme of it is that there are really good, really well-rounded one-seed teams this year. And it's a lot of teams with experience. It's not just like a bunch of five-stars. Duke might be a little bit. But a bunch of five-stars that have just been compiled together, and they're starting to, you know, the one-and-done era making a big run. College sports is not that anymore. That it has shifted away from that. It is about experience. Half these guys have played at smaller schools. Walter Clayton was at Iona. Rick Pitino found him, and he's going to have the best player on the University of Florida. You mentioned Elijah Martin, who was at FAU on that FAU run team. He's there now. Danny Wolf was at Yale, who's on Michigan now. They're in the second weekend. There's a bunch of Vlad Golden, who was at FAU. These guys don't start at their current school, the majority of them at least. That's the crazy part. Half these guys are transfers in from smaller schools. That is sort of, it's sort of like an earning your stripes. Chaz Lanier, who's on Tennessee, played a great game last night. Played 2 or 3 years at North Florida. And then now he's at Tennessee as one of the better scorers in the SEC. Dalton Knecht, who's now in the Lakers. Played 1 year at Tennessee, pretty good in the tournament. He was at Northern Colorado. John Tanjay, the best player on Wisconsin, who was one of the best players in the Big Ten, one of the best players in the country. Northern Colorado for 2 years. Went to Missouri, got hurt. Was going to use another year of Northern Colorado. Was going to go to New Mexico. Ended up going to Wisconsin. Had a great year. That's the new nature of college basketball. Not similar to football, but basketball, it's more important to play than it is to earn your way up.
One of the reasons that it's different than football is because in football, you have to stay till your junior year before you can move up. Players are getting rotated faster because they're allowed to get drafted earlier in their college career. Cooper Flagg is going to be gone, and Duke could be a whole different team next year.
They will be.
You can't keep these players on your team because they're going into the next level, especially if you're the best of the best type of team. If you're just a normal SEC, ACC type team, you might lose a few players, and then you're grabbing three or four more in the transfer portal. You're allowed to build those up.
Depth in college football is also a bit celebrated. It's okay. Players are willing to sit and learn because whether they're not big enough yet, they're not strong enough yet, there's a physical adjustment that they need to undergo. There's certain players, there's an 18-year-old probably down the street that could go play at a high major Division I school tomorrow. But it's more about putting together a resume, putting together the experience, and getting coaches confident in your ability to help them win games. It's more important for players to develop experience playing at a lower level than it is waiting to play at a higher level. That is where college sports has went. So weirdly enough, we started this conversation was, does the low major, high mid-major team get hurt here because all the high major teams are stealing the FAU players of the world, the North Florida, the Northern Colorado players of the world? But to that same token, I think players are starting to come to grips with the fact that I got to play at a lower level unless I'm an elite of the elite prospect. I have to play at a lower level in order to get to the higher level because that experience will actually help my eventual goal of being capable in the NCAA tournament. Now, that's usually with high major teams, but when you're a team like FAU from 2 years ago, and you have Nick Boyd, who's now at San Diego State, and you have Elijah Martin, who's now is sitting there at Florida. You have John L. Davis, who's at Arkansas. You got Vlad Golden, who's at Michigan. They still made a run together. It was possible then. Didn't get it done. Made a Final Four run. And that was before they got that experience that takes them to their separate respective spots. It's an interesting conversation because I see both sides. A chalky bracket in the NCAA tournament with a lot of transfers, a lot of plug-and-plays from small mid-major teams that have now taken steps forward in their careers. To the same token, mid-major teams don't get to keep around those players because their job is to go there for 1 or 2 years, get good, and then move on. It's an endless cycle that I think college basketball has started to lean itself into. It used to be the one-and-done era. Now we're in the era of transfers. Now we're in the era of experience. UConn, the last 2 years, Cam Spencer was their starting two guard. He was a transfer from Rutgers, was at Loyola Maryland before that. Tristan Newton was a transfer from East Carolina. Hassan Diarra was a transfer from Texas A&M. It transfers all over the court. Not a lot of homegrown. But you sink or you swim. You got to learn how to live. As Jeff Price of Grandview Prep Girls Basketball said to me yesterday at Top 63, he said, "This is the you can't walk away. You got to learn how to figure this out. You got to learn how to navigate." There's now a map. Use it or lose it. Kate Chums and Colin Russo with you. Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet over on ESPN 106.3. We take a timeout here on a March the 23rd edition of the program. We're going to blitz the book a little bit next. We got the round of 32 today. We got a couple one seeds going back after it. We're going to see a final field for our Sweet 16 next weekend as today eventually concludes. A lot to talk about, a lot to do, a lot of bets to be had. Stick around for it. Will be a lot of fun. Blitzing the book coming up next on Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3.
Daisy, right, Soli, Blitz, right, Travolta, right, Pumpkin, left, Alert, Charlotte, left, on one.
This is Sunday Huddle with Colin Russo, presented by Hard Rock Bet.
Sunday Huddle, Colin Russo, Kate Chumson, presented by Hard Rock Bet over on ESPN 106.3 from the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. You get the remainder of the round of 32 to complete today in the NCAA tournament. You get the Sweet 16 coming up next weekend. You had some good games yesterday. Rick Pitino falls as a two-seed St. John's to Arkansas to Coach Calipari. Both coached at Kentucky. Both have taken multiple teams to the Final Four. Two all-time greats. Calipari ended out victorious in Providence yesterday. We got a bunch of games today to get to. We have a couple bracket things to get to. Should be fun as we close out the program here on Sunday Huddle, presented by Hard Rock Bet. Go download the app today on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Go to hardrock.bet online to get started today, because there's plenty of games in the round of 32. And you're going to be watching this stuff anyway, so you might as well sprinkle a little action on it and go get started, because they got a popular bets tab on the Hard Rock Bet app, so you could see what other users are putting together in terms of parlays or singular bets. And you could tail tag along just a few short taps. That's how easy it is. You could live bet. You could player prop. You could do the overs. You could do the unders. Whatever you like, any game you choose. Get up to $100 back in bonus bets if your first bet does not hit. The first bet can be any of those. Can be a parlay, prop, the over. Whatever you like to bet, any game you choose. It's offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus and physically present in Florida. The wager terms and conditions apply. Consider by gambling. Call 1-888. Admit it. All right, kid. First of all, how's your bracket doing?
My bracket's alive.
Really?
It's not great, but it's alive.
Alive how?
All four of my final four teams are still there.
That's very much alive. How many Elite Eights do you have? Do you have that in front of you?
I have one Elite Eight that's gone, and that was St. John's.
That's fine.
But all, so dude, I got seven. I got seven. Now, I did awful in that first round. Like, I did not do well in that first round.
But you got to think long term.
That's where I'm at right now.
You got to get six of the eight Elite Eights and three of the four Final Fours.
In all of my groups that I'm in right now, I'm towards the bottom, but I have a lot of potential to do well in the future.
Right. All right. Who's your champion?
I have Florida as my champion. My big bets, though, I have Iowa State as a Final Four guy.
I like that. And Iowa State played very well against Lipscomb, so a good start for you.
So I've got Michigan beating Auburn, and I've got Iowa State from that division in the Final Four.
So Michigan beating Auburn would be a huge one for you. Okay.
Yep.
So you need Michigan to beat Auburn.
So that's my big one. I've got Alabama beating Duke in the Elite Eight. So that's a huge risk as well. And then I've got Florida and Houston. And I've got Florida and Houston in the championship. So if I get that, that'll be fun, too, just to say I got it. But in order for the bracket and the points to do well, Iowa State's my big gamble, and so far they've looked well.
So that's, I like how you did it. You said it without defining it. What I call that is a bracket winner. You got to have a team that nobody else likely will have, a runaway that will win you your group. That's the idea. You need to have one of those. You can't go fully chalk. Even if it goes fully chalk, that means you need to get the different ones right. But just generally, you put yourself best value is you got to have a bracket winner. Yours is Iowa State. Mine was Clemson. Clemson, who scored 14 points in the first half against McNeese State in the first round as a 5-seed. I was high in Clemson because they went 18-2 in ACC play. They beat Duke. It's an experienced team that's a year removed from a Sweet 16 run. Who would have thought that they would have put 14 points on the board in the first half against McNeese State? They scored 54 in the second half. You think that if they woke up 5 minutes earlier, they lost by 2 points. If they woke up 5 minutes earlier, I probably would have that one still alive. But nonetheless, got burned there, so my bracket is dead.
Purdue looked good yesterday too, so you would have had some competition.
I'm dead. My bracket is dead. I still have Florida winning over Duke, but everybody's got Florida over Duke. My bracket winner was Clemson. Now, weirdly enough, I had BYU beating Wisconsin, so that was a good one. But I needed Clemson. That was my lead. That was my bracket winner. And I don't have that. I had Drake moving on to the Sweet 16. I got burned there. I had St. John's going all the way to Elite Eight. I got burned there.
You don't have BYU over Wisconsin. I'm looking at your bracket right now.
Do I not?
No.
Oh, never mind. I thought I did. I thought I did.
In your heart, you did. But when you put it actually on paper, you didn't.
Oh, I did not. I thought I did. Damn. All right. Well, I got burned. Then I let my emotions lend into that because I know I was up and down on that game. Point being, my bracket's dead as a Dornell. So you got to live and you learn. It's time for us to have a little fun here. Let's blitz the book presented by Hard Rock Bet. Blitz the book presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3, where Kate and I are going to go game by game today for the remainder of the round of 32. Pick against the spread. Kate, you ready for this?
On 3-2-3-2-5, I'm all for it. Did you notice that? Today's date, March 23rd, 2025, 3-2-3-2-5.
Oh.
Round of 32, halfway through with a 5 at the end. Today's awesome.
I like that. Interesting. All right, here we go. Let's start with the 2-1 seeded games, the first of which is Florida 12-10 tip-off. And that one, Florida's favored by 9 points.
I love UConn's experience in this game, but Florida's offense is scary no matter who they play. I want to play this safe and go Florida 9, minus 9 right here.
That's safe. So here's what I would say. UConn, and I've watched every UConn game this year. This is my honest opinion. I've watched enough of Florida. UConn is going to do one of two things, in my opinion. They're going to shoot from 60% from the field, and they're going to go blow for blow with them, and they're going to have a chance to beat them. Or they're going to lose by 34 points. I'm leaning towards the latter. Florida minus 9. Actually, no. This is a low-stakes environment. I'm going UConn plus 9. I need something to root for. Let's get happy today. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think Florida's going to win big. But we'll take it just for the sake of taking it. Baylor's playing Duke as the other 1-9 game. Duke is favored by 12 points in this one. Cade?
This one's the one I'll go with the underdog. I think Duke wins by 10, so I'll go the plus 12.
I'm going to go Duke minus 12. I think Duke is really good. I don't think Vanderbilt's tough. They're experienced to a degree. Good coach. I just think Duke has got too much firepower. Illinois, Kentucky. Kentucky is plus 2 as the 3 seed against Illinois here. Cade, what's your takeaway?
Give me Kentucky. I don't know why they're not favored, but I haven't watched enough college basketball this year, apparently.
I'll tell you why. Kentucky is a little banged up. They're good defensively. I mean, they're not good. They're not good defensively. They're great offensively. They're a deep team enough, decent enough coach. Illinois shoots a ton of threes. 40% of their shots are three-pointers. That's a team that can either win or lose big. I'm going to take Kentucky because I don't trust Illinois to keep that hot shooting up. Kentucky plus 2, I like that as well. Alabama's against St. Mary's today. Alabama's minus 5.5.
So if you go with recency bias, Alabama did not look their best.
Against Robert Morris.
Against Robert Morris. But don't take one game out of proportion when you've had a good season.
And you get the highest scoring team in college basketball.
I'll go Alabama minus 5 right here.
I think I am as well. Alabama minus 5. That team's going to score 90-plus points. The key to beating Alabama is they're going to give you possessions. You're going to have to make sure you score at the possessions. But they can pull away late. 5.5, Alabama can make that lead in a second. I'm not worried about that. Minus 5.5, I'll take an Alabama as well. Colorado State taking Maryland. Colorado State, who is the winner of like 14 straight, playing a Maryland team that's good. But Colorado State played very well against Memphis. They're getting 8 points here.
We did a fun social media bit last year where I asked you guys as talent at ESPN 106.3, name me a double-digit seeded team that will make the Sweet 16. Christian Katz's answer was Grand Canyon. They lost by 32 points against Maryland last week.
Terrible. Terrible.
I'm going to go with Maryland on this one.
I'm going to go Colorado State plus 8, weirdly enough. I hate that Mountain West Conference, but they played really, really well against Memphis. And
yeah, they did.
Yeah. And weirdly enough, the Big Ten starting to falter a little bit. Everybody's talking about how hot they were to start out. They went 8-0 to start in the first round. And then Wisconsin and UCLA fall. Interesting. So we'll see how Maryland's able to, if they could keep pace with an 8-point game. Colorado State plus 8, I'm taking that one. Ole Miss, Iowa State. Cade's Iowa State here. Minus 5 in this one against Ole Miss.
I hate betting games where I'm emotionally attached to them right now. I basically have to go Iowa State on this one.
I would agree with that. You got to go Iowa State. I think this game's going to be close. I'm going to take Ole Miss plus 5. Iowa State's got size, but they're missing their second best player, Keshawn Gilbert. Maybe their best player. But Iowa State's still very good. They can shoot threes at a high clip. So can Ole Miss. Ole Miss got a good coach in the tournament, Chris Beard. And they got a bunch of guards. Ole Miss to keep it close. I think Iowa State to win, plus +5. New Mexico taking on Michigan State. Michigan State is minus -7.5, Cade.
Would love this Cinderella story. If, like, if there is a Cinderella to vote for.
Everybody put their eggs in the wrong Pitino basket. Maybe Richard Pitino is the coach in New Mexico. Might be the one.
I mean, I'm going to be safe and say Michigan State, but this is the one I'm cheering for the upset most today.
I like rooting for close games. This is the type of game where I'm going to root for a close game. Michigan State does not beat themselves, but New Mexico is also very, very good blow for blow with Marquette in their first round. Plus +7.5, I'm taking that. Oregon, Arizona. Arizona's minus -3.5.
So I hate to divert from what we've been going through, but the bet here is not the over-under, or the bet here is not the spread. It's the over-under. The over-under right now is set at 152.5. These teams last week, 81 for Oregon, 93 for Arizona. I know they're playing against double-digit seeded teams, but to me that just says they can score, and I see them running up the scoreboard today. So I would probably go Oregon plus +3.5, but the safer bet for me is the over on 152.5.
All right. You like that over there. This is a Pac-12 after dark game. How about that? A little trip down memory lane. I don't know where to go on this game. Oregon's very good in the tournament. I was impressed with Arizona. I thought they'd get punched in the mouth a little bit more than they did against Akron, but Akron stinks. Akron had no size, and they were just completely outclassed. Oregon's got size. I'm going to take Oregon plus +3.5 here. Good tournament team. Good coach. Don't trust Arizona consistently. Oregon plus +3.5. I'm going big underdogs today.
Shout out us last week for getting 5 for 5 in conference tournament championships last week. We're on a roll right now.
We'll see if the hot streak continues here. I'm not sure how confident I am in that. But nonetheless, that was our Blitz the Buck presented by Hard Rock Bet over on ESPN 106.3. Kate Chubbs and Colin Russo with you. Appreciate everybody tuning in on ESPN 106.3. We'll be back at it next week to break down what's going on in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. It's a fun time of the year. You get the NCAA tournament in action. Enjoy your Sunday in mid-late March as the weather is beautiful right now in South Florida. That's Kate Chubbs and Colin Russo with you. It's been Sunday Huddle presented by Hard Rock Bet on ESPN 106.3.
The preceding program was paid for in full by Hard Rock Bet. Advice and opinions expressed during this program were solely those of the guests or hosts of this program and not of ESPN 106.3 or Good Karma Brands.